This is Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. We hope you'll stay tuned. And I am very, very happy to have with us Enver Masood of the Wisdom Fund. Mr. Masood, thank you for being with us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Well, we appreciate that you were able to be with us, because we are here to discuss the truth about Islam, and I think that's tremendously important, considering that in the media, mostly what we hear about is, you know, Islamic militants or the Nation of Islam or whatever.
And I think
and I think most people are really, for the most part, very, very much unaware about what Islam is really about. Can we first, though, talk about the Wisdom Fund and use that as our base for starting this conversation?
Sure. The Wisdom Fund basically is something I conceived after writing for 3 or 4 years for a local paper following the Gulf War. And when this was set up about 4 years ago, we basically do two things. One is we, in a very short message, try to describe what Islam is. In fact, it's just a 600-word message that we have made into a poster. It's been placed as an ad in several magazines and journals, displayed in Washington Metro, etc. The other thing we do is provide perspectives on major national and international events that the major media usually do not provide. That's it, basically.
When you're saying providing perspective on international events that the U.S. media is not doing, can you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, we have a number of people who submit articles for our website. The last one on Chechnya that I wrote, in fact, talked about the Chechen situation. You know, the Chechens are being described as terrorists. They're being blamed for the death of about 300 people in apartment buildings in Moscow. But yet there is no proof that they did it. On the other hand, there's ample history of about 350 years of colonial oppression by the Russian Empire. Chechnya is an independent, is an ethnically distinct group. They were colonialized by the Russians. They've been mistreated. They were exiled at one time where about a quarter of their population was wiped out. And they've been conducting a war of independence for several years, and they're going to continue that war of independence.
And all we hear in the major media is that they are some sort of a terrorist breakaway group that, for the most part, according to the major media, you know, no one can understand why they're doing this, is what I'm hearing you say.
Right. They're terrorists in the way that our founding fathers were terrorists.
That one always gets kind of left out, doesn't it? We're talking with Enver Masood of the Wisdom Fund, and we're here to discuss the truth about Islam. Mr. Masood, let's talk, if we can, about Islam and realizing that, I mean, it's a large subject to talk about with, you know, tremendous amount of history and scholarly study and all of that. But as I understand it from the truth about Islam is that you really have managed to kind of simplify it to a degree,
well,
so people can demystify it a little bit.
That was the aim. We purposely, we asked ourselves, what is it that the American audience does not know and is being misrepresented? And we reduced the doctrine and the description to as few words as possible. It literally, these 600 words went through about 70 to 80 drafts to get down to 600 words.
Let's talk, if we can, about what Islam is.
Okay. Islam, very simply, is submission or surrender to the will of God. This is not a passive submission, but it is, Islam considers it the natural state of human affairs, surrendering to, so we are all, live under some supreme powers, laws of physics, laws of science, biology, that dictate how we live in this world. And Islam merely means surrender to the will of God. And the word itself is derived from the Arabic for peace. Islam is the faith, Muslim is the believer. Often that is confusing to many in the West, because whereas you have Christians and Christianity, Jews, Judaism and Jews, we have Islam and Muslim.
And certainly, I mean, since we live primarily in a Judeo-Christian country, which is changing, but most people really don't understand those differences and really don't understand much about Islam. I think many people, I know myself, I can't remember where I heard it, but I was once given the idea that Islam was in fact this sort of penultimate warrior religion whereby all adherents to it were dictated to go out and spread the word of Allah by any means necessary, including up to war. That's not true, is it?
That is the myth propounded by the West ever since the early spread of Islam, within 100 years after the prophet of Islam's death in 632 A.D., Islam spread from Spain to the Indus River in India. And for obvious reasons, the Christian community was shocked by that, and they built up all sorts of myths about Islam. But it was Muslims who conquered lands for other reasons. Islam's spread was peaceful. For example, let me give you two examples. The biggest Muslim country is Indonesia, with a population just a little less than ours. And no Muslim soldiers ever went there. Islam spread by the example of traders. And Indonesians are spread over 3,000 islands. So can you imagine 3,000 islands, and it was just example of traders?
Right.
India is another example. India was ruled by Muslim for several centuries, but there was no forced conversion to Islam. India still remains the largest Hindu country.
So what we have, it seems to me, is very, very much a blending whereby there may be activities that people who are Muslim engage in, but they're engaging in those activities for reasons that are completely separate from their religion.
Yes, just like we all do, Christians, right. Jews, etc.
Well, I guess the point is, for me, is that, I mean, there seems to be this constant putting these things together, that, well, somebody did something, well, that's because they're an Islamic fundamentalist, or whatever.
You know, we've done that with religion, we do that with race, somebody did something because they're black or Hispanic or whatever, and you've got to separate the action from the faith or the race or the whatever of the person.
We're talking with Enver Massoud of the Wisdom Fund. We're discussing the truth about Islam. Go ahead, were you going to say something?
I was going to say, I missed one very important point when you mentioned Judeo-Christian religion. Islam is not a new religion. What Muslims believe Islam is the same religion, the same message that was given to a line of prophets, Abraham, Moses, Jesus, Muhammad. Muslims believe that all of them taught the same message, submission to the will of God. And what Prophet Muhammad did was correct some of the earlier texts which had been corrupted. This is what Muslims believe. So Muslims believe Jews, Christians, etc., they are all Muslim with, say, a lowercase m, whereas Muslims, those who actually profess the religion, are Muslims with an uppercase m.
What is the difference there?
There is no difference. It's just that if you are a Christian or Jew, you do not consider yourself a Muslim, but a learned Muslim would consider you a Muslim.
Carl, you live on the air.
Hi there. A question about Muslims and the women's role in the Muslim religion. We get the view most of the time in the media about, you know, the shawls and they can't expose, and it seems to be very oppressive. Can you clarify that?
Sure, I'd be happy to, and I can refer you to some extensive literature on the subject at our website. In terms of the shawl or the burqa, as it's called, or the veil, that is not really a Muslim custom. It is a cultural thing belonging largely to the Middle East, and it actually came from the Byzantine Christians. At Islam's holiest place of worship, which is the once-in-a-lifetime pilgrimage to Mecca, the women go there with their heads uncovered. In terms of how women are oppressed under Islam. If you look at your history, you'll find that women had rights to property and rights to the vote. Well, let's say rights to property. They had those rights 1,200 years before they had them in Europe. And the right to vote, countries like Turkey, Egypt, and Syria gave the women the right to vote as early as did Europe, and even before Switzerland. So, you know, this the media plays up a few examples and makes that into the oppression of all women.
Well, it's interesting because it seems to me, if I look at some of the strict evangelical interpretations of Christianity, certainly women seem to be given, at the very least, a second-class citizenship in that. That doesn't seem to get played up as much, you know. I wonder what that tells us. It seems to be an investment in painting Islam and its practices in as bad a light as possible.
Exactly. In fact, in the paper I referred to earlier, we have an excellent paper comparing the Islamic, Jewish, and Christian teaching on women. It's at our website, and you can look up all these. It has quotations from the Bible, the Torah, etc. And as to why the media does this, it's interesting that this process accelerated after the fall of the Soviet Union. It was then that the U.S. had to have enemies to justify their defense spending. And they considered, too, the yellow peril and the green peril, the yellow being the Chinese and the green us, the Muslims. And that it's being used to justify defense spending.
Well, that's a really interesting point that you bring up, and one that I have heard from talking to other practitioners of Islam and political analysts, that that in reality, that's what's really happening here, is that Islam is being used as the new red menace or whatever. I mean, that's what I'm hearing you say.
That's half the reason. We have, again, an excellent paper on that by a former editor of an Israeli newspaper who teaches at American University. He's written on that very subject, creating the Islamic fundamentalist threat. The other half of the coin is that if you look at where much of the world's resources are these days, they're under Muslim lands, Middle East, and what you don't, you're hearing just a little bit about the Chechnya area, but it's the $2 to $4 trillion estimated of oil under the Caspian Sea. That's the real battleground.
We're talking with Enver Masood of the Wisdom Fund. We're discussing the truth about Islam. Mr. Masood, when you were talking, the thought came to me that are we talking, in essence, about, on some level, the same process that the European colonizers came in to this land with, whereby, you know, they needed to destroy these people and justified it by saying, more or less, you know, they're worshipers of an untrue religion, and they're bad and they're evil and they're devil worshipers, and we have to get rid of them, which then, you know, doing it for some sort of high-minded, though somewhat twisted, moral reason was really an excuse for just plundering and wiping them out.
That's exactly it, with one difference. You know, the colonial powers, if you may not know, is that the fall of Muslim Spain in 1492 is what launched Columbus's voyage. It was also in 1492 that Jews and Muslims were expelled from Spain, or that, or convert to Christianity. That was the ultimatum given. And, of course, as you know, following Columbus, about 15 million Native Americans were killed here, and 50 or 60 in South America. Africa was devastated. Much of Asia, much of China. And that was the colonial expansion. The only difference today is we don't colonize other countries. We're imperial powers. We sit back and push buttons and launch cruise missiles.
Right. It's become a much more video game type of war, except for the people who are on the ground. Mr. Masood, I'd like to go back to something that you were talking about that I found very interesting and wanted to hear a little bit more about. You know, we were talking about a sharing of the profits, if you will, amongst Judaism and Christianity and Islam. And then you talked about a somewhat of a divergence when Muhammad corrected some of the corrupted scripture. Can you talk just a little bit more about that?
Okay. The major point, the very largest point of divergence is the role of Jesus. Muslims believe there is only one God, that Jesus was a prophet. This is the, you know, the biggest point of divergence. In Islam, the Quran is the equivalent of Jesus in terms of faith. Like, the Quran is the Word of God, whereas Jesus is the Son of God in Christianity. That is the starting point of your acceptance or of the faith. Beyond that, there is not a whole lot of divergence.
And yet there seems to be this great play that there really is.
Well, you have to ask yourself, when you say there's a divergence, which Christianity are we talking about? There are so many versions of the Bible. They were written over many centuries. In fact, I understand that the King James Version was finalized only in the last century. And whereas there's only been one Quran that was finalized within 25 years of the Prophet's death, and there has been no divergence in that Quran. So when you compare the Quran to Christianity, which scripture should you compare it to? That's the issue. And with some, you would find less divergence. With others, perhaps greater divergence.
This is Full Logic Reverse. We'll be back in just a few moments. Carla, you're live on the air.
I just wondered about the tradition of enlightenment and transcendence. It seems like the Muslim religion is all about one person, and really, Christ personified what he hoped all humanity could become, which is God-like and able to communicate with God directly, which most people have forgotten or buried or just not interested in because it isn't material.
Like God?
Well, yeah.
Okay. Well let's
I find that limiting.
Okay, let's let Mr. Masood talk to that.
Fair statement. In Islam, God is indescribable. There are some aspects of God one can describe. There are others that are unknown. The Prophet Muhammad said something to the effect that dwell upon God's creation but not upon his nature or else you will perish. In Islam, God is nowhere close to our understanding. It's hard to say. We do not think of God as a human being or a person.
We're talking.
So it's you're very correct. Now, in terms of worshiping God, Muslims worship God directly. There is no clergy in Islam, unlike much of the Christian religion or the Jewish religion. Islam has no cult clergy. It's one-on-one between the person and God.
And Mr. Masood, I mean, certainly there is this issue of do we accept any of this on any more than just faith?
Well, ultimately, all religions, there's a point at which you accept or don't on faith. These are things that I don't. My degrees are in engineering, three in science, three of them, and there's not. You just cannot prove these things. But what is interesting is that some of the most eminent scientists reach a point in their scientific investigation where they feel that there is no way that science can explain something, and there has to be some power, however you describe that power, God, or you call it nature, or science, or whatever. And, for example, I read a comment the other day about the creation of the universe, and just one scientist described that if you accept the Big Bang theory, that would be like accepting that a tornado came through town and produced a Boeing 747.
That's a very interesting way of putting it.
If the Big Bang If you discount some supreme power and say the earth and everything on it was created in that nature from the Big Bang, he says the equivalent of that tornado creating the Boeing 747. Now, as I said, in Islam, it is suggested that it's a waste of time to dig too far into the nature of God, but we should stay down here on earth and investigate science and investigate the space and the oceans. And Islam is very strong in acquiring knowledge.
We're talking with Enver Masood of the Wisdom Fund about the truth about Islam. Caller, you're on the air.
I'll turn down my radio.
Okay.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
It's programs like this that help me validate my KVMR membership. I'm very thankful to hear this dialogue happening on KVMR. Here's my question to you. I'm just a simple cab driver.
honorable professions.
Here's my question, and I'll take my comment on the air, please. It's my understanding that if you were to get these prophets, peace and blessings upon all of them, Jesus, Muhammad, the guy that started the Mormon Church, any of them, if you were to get them in a room together and close the door, I'd be willing to bet there'd be tons of laughter and joy, and you know, it wouldn't be a boring, dull thing. Am I deluded?
That's an interesting thought. I think we can speculate on that, but I think they would be shocked to find that we are warring with each other instead of living in peace and harmony.
Well, one would certainly believe that to be the case, I would think, if we're talking about enlightened beings, both human and non. Mr. Masood, I'd like to ask you a question, because many people's experience in hearing about Islam is from hearing about the Nation of Islam here in America. How is Islam, mainstream Islam, and the Nation different?
Well, the Nation of Islam, I'm not exactly sure of all their beliefs. I have come across some of their writings and picked up stuff secondhand. One, they ascribe some prophethood to one of their founders, and that is totally against Islam. In Islam, there is no prophet after Prophet Muhammad. The other thing, in its earlier version, there was some, it was largely black or African-American oriented, and those who were outside of the community were not entirely welcome, whereas Islam, it has struck down race barriers from day one. The first call to prayer from the mosque that Prophet Muhammad built was given by a freed slave by the name of Bilal from Ethiopia, then Abyssinia.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Is this Mike?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Mike. This is Bill.
Hi, Bill.
How are you doing?
We're doing good.
Long time no hear.
Great. What can we do for you?
I'm fascinated by your discussion, and it brings to mind something that somebody told me once, and I appreciate having heard Francis, it's even more poignant. Let me see if I can remember the quote. It is at least as preposterous to defend the faith as it is to attack it. And I think what that means is the faith stands alone, and God is so huge that mere human opinion really doesn't affect it one way or the other. It does affect people, but people who find themselves in a position to defend or attack the faith are not of the faithful, but are actually politicians. And in fact, defending the faith is a trick of the devil, because what it does is it keeps us in constant conflict with those who would attack, and it keeps us from the true word and from God himself.
That sounds really good to me. Thank you for calling in.
I don't know if I'm defending or not. If one is asked a question, one answers.
Yeah, I don't know necessarily that your discussion is defense. I think it's more clarification. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Mike. I'm enjoying your show and your guest.
Thank you.
I just had a quick comment. It's a sub-law of Murphy's Law that has always struck me as being profound as far as healing polarities. And it's called Garth's Distinction. And it goes, there are two types of people in the world: those who divide people into two types, and those who don't. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Well, that's a very interesting observation. If you're familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs that's taught in management and psychology courses, all human beings have certain basic needs, the first one being survival, and then there's about five or six others. So if once we all realize that, then how does a politician rise to the top other than to divide us? The only way political leaders can emerge is by dividing us.
Caller, you're on here.
I got one question about Taliban and treatment of women.
Okay.
It seems to be well documented in the media that the Taliban does oppress women in Afghanistan. Now, if that's true, are those bad Muslims or uninformed people, or do they just have old tribal problems, or what?
You know, someone asked me that question just two or three days ago over our internet, and I wish I had the response in front of me because I gave it a great deal of thought. But the first thing, what the Taliban does is something part of their culture, not so much their religion. Second, I have heard a lobbyist testify on the Hill, a female Afghan lobbyist, that the women in Afghanistan are happy that they are now more secure under the Taliban, and these freedoms that we would miss, they don't miss them. There was a British female journalist who visited Afghanistan and wrote lengthy articles about that also. But despite all that, I would agree with you that much of what they're doing strikes me as un-Islamic and repressive, and I wish it weren't. But that has nothing to do with Islam. It's just their culture, those individuals doing certain things.
We've been speaking with Enver Masood of the Wisdom Fund, discussing the truth about Islam. And Mr. Masood, I would really like to have you on the show again, because it's obviously a topic that is interesting to our listeners and myself as well. Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share with us today, and then also perhaps how people could get more information about the Wisdom Fund?
Well, I have hundreds of thoughts. I think the simplest thing would be if they visited our website, which is TWF.org, TWF as in the Wisdom Fund. We have answers to these and many other questions in a very, very simple format, and you're welcome to come out there, and I'd be happy to come back anytime you like.
Great. Well, we will certainly arrange to have you back on the program. Enver Masood of the Wisdom Fund, discussing the truth about Islam. Thank you for being with us on Full Logic Reverse today.
Thank you, Mike. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you for joining us for this edition of the program today. I'm your host, Mike Thornton, and it's been my pleasure to be part of the team bringing you Full Logic Reverse. If you'd like more information about FLR, you can contact us via email, flr@jps.net, or by telephone, 530-271-0804. We invite you to join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.